Hello and welcome back to Serie A Spotlight. We're your hosts Jay
and Matt.
You know what time it is!
I can't tell you guys enough how much you've been my internal monologue when thinking about football for the last year.
Yes, amazing!
We get to record while drinking some wine.
Jake and I will have a very special soft spot for Salerno.
Yeah, we love him.
Stop zooming in on Allegri's face, boy. You're gonna make
How
me
are you
break.
Exposing me?
Because you're gonna make me break.
Hello and welcome back to yet another episode of Serie A Spotlight. This is episode 178 and we're your hosts Jake
and Matt
here to introduce the three newly promoted teams to Serie A next season.
Yes, unfortunately we are bidding adieu to Empoli, Venezia and Monza, but we are very excited to be saying hello to Sassuolo, Pisa and Cremonese, and we have got a bunch of information about these teams to provide to you guys. Before we get into that, we'd like to shout out our lovely sponsors, Benevo Bid. Get your autographed items from top players, including match-issued kits, autographed from their website. You can find the link in our bio. They have some amazing new arrivals, including a signed Gullit kit from 1988, the away kit, an Italy 2006 home World Cup kit signed by Marco Materazzi, an away kit signed by Javier Zanetti, by Maicon, and even some Juve kits from the 1990s signed by Di Livio and Torricelli. The one I'm most excited for, personally, and Jake, get it ready, is the Italy 2024-2025 Matteo Retegi home jersey, which is match issued from the Italy versus France game from 2024, signed by Retegi, Buffon, Spalletti, Frattesi, Donnarumma, and it's just a stunning kit as well, one of the latest Adidas designs. Pull that up, brother, look at that. Look at that. And
gorgeous.
Most of the proceeds go to charity, guys, so check out the link in our bio, put in your bids, it's nice and early, so you'll get a nice little boost and frighten off your opponents with your, you know, huge bids, and you'll enter the chance. Thank you once again to our sponsors in Benevo Bid.
Absolutely fantastic collection, and it's a shame that they're not here to stay, bro, because I'm getting attached.
Yeah, I am. We've already, there's the Club World Cup on, and it's very tempting to put on one of these kits, but obviously we've made some promises to these guys, so we won't be allowed to do that.
Exactly. Do notice my Sassuolo hat for this episode. Also notice my special Pisa t-shirt that my father picked up from Pisa itself. He had to queue for about 2 hours to pick up this simple t-shirt.
But he didn't, eh?
He didn't, he
paid a woman in the queue.
That's
a fucking fennec, man. That's
exactly.
A fennec.
That's him, bro. If you're insinuating that we bribe...
We're Maltese. I mean, make of that what you will. We're a country between Italy and Libya. Do we bribe is the question. Perhaps we do. If you guys are new here, that's not all we do. We don't only bribe. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube, and rate us 5 stars on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast. We typically, throughout the season, cover every single match, every single team, every single week, but it is the summer period, so we basically have to pull interesting content out of our asses. And I guess this one, we've been promoting it for a while. It's a highly anticipated one that I'm excited for. We also typically have weekly tactical analysis episodes where our tactical analyst chooses a game, chooses a team, and goes fully fledged into that team, gives us a deep dive. And yeah, if you really enjoy our content, just become a patron, because why the fuck not, really?
Yes, this is the perfect segue. Joey D is the champion, of course, of our first ever Fanta Calcio League, 28-man Fanta Calcio League, as you can see here. His kit has arrived. He decided to go for an Orsolini kit. In fact, the group chat decided for him, right?
He did.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah, absolutely. So there he is in all his glory, biceps shining in the sun, rocking
what a
that
guy.
Number 7.
Joey D.
Amazing. Here are some of his best team names, of course, that the regular listeners will... will recognize over here. Puff Puff Pause was one of his best ones.
Insane.
Gol Danigas in Paris, of course. Yildiz Nuts, Tigjani Bravo, Yas Queen Adli, Mein Kempf, Lukumi, I'm the captain now, Emmanuel Giazzi, and Filade Mania.
I mean, Joey D, I'm so glad you won. Keep that creativity up and we'll be very happy to pay for your kit, because that is the main thing, guys. Yes, you pay $3.99 a month, you get added to the latest group chat in Serie A history, and but you also enter the fantasy league, and if you're top, you get a shout out every week on this prestigious platform.
This could be you.
Exactly.
For $3.99 a month.
Exactly. Like we said, guys, in this episode, we are going to be going through the newly promoted teams. Let's start off, actually, with just giving a shout-out to some players that we probably won't be seeing in Serie A next season that absolutely rocked Serie B last season. I think the main one that I am upset, but we probably will be seeing him in Serie A, is Francesco Pio Esposito, one of the three Esposito brothers. 19 years old, played for Spezia, scored a staggering 17 goals this season, and he also had 9 assists. No, sorry, that's Salvatore Esposito, his brother. So that is just 17 goals for Francesco Pio Esposito, one of the youngest Esposito brothers at Spezia. He absolutely carried them. Spezia finished in third place, but it wasn't good enough as they lost out in the final. Of course, Pietro Jemello, he's becoming a staple name in Serie B season to season. He represented Catanzaro and scored 16 goals. Adorante is another player. In just 33 games, he managed 15 goals. Adorante actually plays for, I believe, Juve Stabia. Is that Juve Stabia?
I can double-check that.
Don't mind. Christian Spendi.
Oh, yeah.
Also had a fantastic... Not the Spendi you're used to in Serie A, guys, but this guy's racked up 11 goals. And Leonardo Mancuso, you all know Mancuso, who got 10 goals this season as well.
Exactly.
Was a nailed-on starter.
Adorante does indeed play with Juve Stabia. I think next season, bro, it's about time that the Espositos all go up to Serie A, man. They have been impressing a lot. Of course, the main Esposito, I believe it's Salvatore, is in Serie A. He is doing very well. He's one of the most...
Salvatore is one is also course. At Spezia.
So it's Francesco Pio. Whatever. The Esposito of Empoli. Okay?
Exactly.
The Esposito of Empoli has been doing very well in Serie A. Uh-huh. Of course, playing alongside Colombo, keeping things fresh. Then there are the Espositos at Spezia. One of them is a striker, the other is a midfielder. And they are all doing bits. They're doing very well. They almost got Spezia promoted, took them to the final of the relegation playoffs.
Of course, these guys are all owned by Inter, of the Esposito brothers. And just season by season, they're always loaned out. I think Inter, with their new management now, with the fact that they had the oldest squad in all of Europe alongside Valladolid last season, they're going to want some young blood into the team. And also financially, perhaps Inter aren't the most sustainable club financially over the past few years. So recalling these players from loan, especially the Esposito brothers, could be a really, really good shout from them.
Exactly. Just to summarize quickly, to remove any confusion, Sebastiano Esposito is the one we know in Serie A. Francesco is the bomber in Serie B, and Salvatore is the midfield metronome.
Whatever their parents' name is, the fact that they named one Sebastiano and the other one Salvatore, and then the other one Francesco Pio, very confusing.
Yes.
Especially the two S's. Of course, and then there were some creative players that I would like to highlight as well. Palumbo racked up 10 assists at the tender age of 28 this season. Salvatore Esposito got 9 assists. Kevin Piscopo got 9 assists. He's not Maltese, surprisingly. The surname Piscopo is notoriously, well, almost a Maltese surname at this point. God bless this guy's surname. I'm going to find it really hard to pronounce. But Rafael Odogwu, Italian-Nigerian gentleman, 9 assists as well. Manuel Ciccioni, 8 assists. Davis Mensah, 8 assists. And also Filippo Rannocchia with 8 assists for Palermo.
Nice.
So that's just an honorable mention to some players that perhaps we won't be seeing in Serie A next year, but do keep an eye out for them in the years to come. let's start off with going through the playoffs. So how does it work? What teams get promoted to Serie A? You may be asking. So obviously, first and second instantly get promoted to Serie A. Sassuolo absolutely dominated everyone after they spent just a singular season in Serie B after multiple seasons in Serie A. Instantly went back up thanks to Fabio Grosso. In second place, Spezia. In second place, Pisa, run by Pippo Inzaghi, went up. They have now confirmed Gilardino, which we will be getting into later on. And then from third place all the way down to eighth place, they go to the playoffs. Might seem a little bit unfair, but the structure in which it takes place does make it a little bit more fair. So in third place, Spezia, and in fourth place, Cremonese, these guys go straight to the semifinals. They go to the two-legged semifinals. From 5th to 8th, so Juve, Stabia, Catanzaro, Cesena and Palermo, these guys need to play each other over a singular leg. So 5th place Juve, Stabia needed to play Palermo, and Catanzaro, who are in 6th place, needed to play 7th place Cesena. So 5th versus 8th and 6th versus 7th in a one-legged quarter-final. What happened over here is Catanzaro got past Cesena with the score of 1-0 thanks to a goal by Iemello. Juve Stabia got past Palermo against all odds, beating them 1-0 thanks to a goal by Adorante. I say against all odds because Palermo are Palermo, but Juve Stabia really shocked a lot of people this season. In the semifinals, and then Juve Stabia continued that momentum and they beat Cremonese 2-1 in the first leg, only for Cremonese to come back in the second leg at home and absolutely cream them with the score of 3-0 over there. This is where you start seeing the importance of having a thick and deep squad. Because these games happen in such quick succession, Cremonese, the amount of depth that they have that perhaps Juve Stabia don't have, was really beneficial for Cremonese.
Absolutely.
So Cremonese go through to the final over there. Spezia had no problem beating Catanzaro 2-0 away from home and then beating them 2-1 at home, which means that the final was then between Cremonese and Spezia, which is third and fourth. First game, 0-0, stalemate, very, very cagey affair. Second game, in the 79th minute, Cremonese were up 3-0, brother. Mm-hmm. The game ended 3-2. The three goals were scored by two by De Luca, one by Colo Colo, and then in the 83rd minute, Esposito scored one of them, because I just have Esposito written down. One of the Esposito brothers scored for Spezia, and then 2 minutes later, Vignali scored, but Cremonese avoided that scare, and they got promoted, which segues us perfectly into our first team that we'll be discussing, Cremonese.
It is indeed Francesco Pio.
Amazing.
Very good. Shall we go through the playoff drama now, or shall we do that later, brother? What do you think?
Shall we do it later? Let's do it later. Forgot about that and I just started rambling. Apologies.
Sure. So, yes, we can start with Cremonese. So, Cremonese, of course, were managed by Giovanni Stroppa. He has since stepped onto different things. He will be taking charge of Venezia. Now, just to give you a bit of a background on Cremonese, they are owned by Giovanni Arvedi, a wealthy industrialist, who provides significant financial backing compared to the level of Serie B. Of course, Cremonese's squad includes some high-value players that we have grown used to seeing in Serie A as well, the likes of Dennis Johnson, Francesco Gelli, Mattia Valotti. All these guys take the squad value to about 40 to 60 million, which is among the higher in Serie B.
Christ, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. They have good commercial deals in place, but they lacked parachute payments compared to, for example, the likes of Sassuolo. So Sassuolo spent 3 years in Serie A before getting relegated. So, of course, they received some good financial backing to project them back up
the
to
Serie A. The reason you say 3 years is because that's the cap, because Sassuolo spent around 8 years in Serie A before getting relegated. But yeah, the 3 years, you basically get like 10 million a season.
So it works like this. So if you do one season in Serie A, you get 10 million. If you do two seasons, you get 15, and three seasons, you get 25 million. Please note that these don't need to be in order.
Okay.
So they only need to be consecutive seasons. So it's just one season in the last 3 years, you get 10 million. You know?
I guess that's a good incentivization.
Yeah.
To give people a bit of a to give some teams a chance, because you lose so many players when you go down to B, man. You lose so many players. You lose sponsors. Because you're getting less views, so you end up changing sponsors and going for a cheaper one.
So Strappa is the man who promoted Crotone in 2019 and 2020, finishing in second. He promoted Monza in 2021-2022 through the playoffs. We remember that very clearly. Absolutely. We covered it. And of course, Cremonese now through the playoffs.
And also in 2017, Foggia.
Oh.
He got Foggia.
Damn, promoted. I had no idea.
This is his fourth promotion, Strappa. Strappa, of course, after getting Monza promoted, stayed on for, I believe, the first 8 matches of the season at Monza. They weren't doing well at all after they spent so much of Berlusconi's money on Italian players. As you can imagine, it is Silvio Berlusconi of the Forza Italia party that we're talking about, the right-wing Forza Italia party. But then after he stepped down, that is what launched the career of Palladino, who's currently without a club, but obviously last season's Fiorentina manager.
Nice. So yes, Strappa is now obviously most likely going to Venezia, while Cremonese are flirting with the idea, or more than flirting with the idea, probably trying their absolute best to land miracle man Davide Nicola.
Do you blame them?
Of course.
So Strappa didn't exactly have an easy tenure this season. Mm. In fact, there was a reason they got promoted, but they still sacked him. First of all, their goal was to get automatic promotion, Cremonese. Mm. You talk about a team that last season were in the playoffs as well, and they were one of the favorites to go all the way. But he had a really shaky start this season. In the first 8 games, he had just 3 wins, and he was lingering outside the automatic promotion spots. So he was sacked on the 8th of October, and they hired some guy named Eugenio Corini. He stepped in, but he only lasted a month, and he picked up 2 wins in 5 matches. Fucking cutthroat, huh, Cremonese? Yeah. And what did they do? So he lost he won only 2 games in 5 matches, one of which was a damaging loss to Mantova. And in a twist, they decided to bring Strappa back to the helm. They brought Strappa back. He made the necessary changes. They actually had a good January transfer window as well. And he got them to 4th spot, which after a slow start, after 13 games, with essentially, we're talking 5 wins at this point, did an excellent job to give them consistency and to get them to the top 4. Some of the names they brought in now, some of these they brought in summer, and some of these they brought in January. But from Juve Next Gen, Barbieri, who ended up being very, very important for them, Federico Bonazzoli, Manuel De Luca from Sampdoria, one of their top scorers, Francesco Folino from Juve Stabia, Marco Nasti on a free from Milan, 20 years old. People will remember him as this exciting player. However, he didn't do too well. I believe he only
baby
got two.
Baby bomber, they call him.
Baby bomber, more like just baby, because he hasn't really been doing much this season. Other good signings that they made, Ceccherini from Hellas Verona, Valotti from Monza, Azzi was a brilliant signing from Cagliari. Of course, this is a team that prioritizes their width, so signings like Azzi and Barbieri were very important for them. And for me, their best signing out of the lot was Van de Putte.
Of course, bro.
Van de Putte.
Van de Putte is a midfielder, 29 years old. He's Belgian. He wears the number 27 for them. He's a great passer of the ball. He's got a good eye for goal too, and some very nice technique. He was the main playmaker on this team. Yes, bro, absolutely.
He was at Catanzaro last season, who were also in the playoffs. They notoriously played, I believe, total football. Was the
tiki-taka,
the style.
Right?
Tiki-taka was the game style they went for.
No, it's true, bro. But let's break down a little bit how Strappa played with Cremonese in Serie B. So the base setup, of course, was a 3-5-2. It was balanced and compact in shape. Now, his style of play is patient, structured, lateral-focused. He does not encourage risk-taking much, to be honest. It's pretty structured, their play. And they don't really play long balls very often. Mm-hmm. Even though their striker in Vasquez loves to switch the play from one side to another. So in possession, they become kind of a 3-2-5.
Yep.
The wing backs and the rotating mezzala push up. And out of possession, they drop to a 5-3-2, of course, with the wing backs dropping in to create a 5-man. back line.
So what he needs is incredibly fit wing backs.
Exactly.
And by incredibly fit, I don't mean good looking wing backs, but I mean absolute bombers, trains. Is yeah. what they look for.
And in fact, Atsi was a very strong signing. And if you remember at the start of the season on the podcast, I said Atsi is just waiting for a goal, man.
Uh-huh.
You know, with Cagliari. Uh-huh. He was getting so close. He was shooting, was really feeling himself. Then suddenly, out of the blue, the goal never came, by the way, in Serie A. And then he was sent to Cremonese, or he was picked up by Cremonese, rather. And he found it a bit easier here. I believe he picked up 3 goals.
Even Barbieri picked up a few goals.
Yeah.
Of course, Franco Vasquez was their top scorer with 9, De Luca with 8, Colo-Colo with 7, Jonsson with 6, Bonazzoli with 6, and Van de Putte with 4. But yes, that's a great breakdown of how they play their football. They do enjoy maintaining structure while they're attacking. 3-2-5, those three remain very, very compact. Mm-hmm. So should you dispossess them, essentially you've got 5 very compact players in the defensive phase that are just waiting to destroy you.
Exactly. Similarly to Sassuolo there, actually, with less quality.
Mm-hmm.
If we just have to summarize their strengths and weaknesses, I've got a nice little summary over here. Strong wide play and wing combinations, as we've stressed. The midfielders are very good at orchestrating play and keeping things ticking. They're dangerous in set pieces thanks to their size and aerial ability. And they're solid defensively, as Matty said, of course, because they're so compact. However, their weaknesses are that they struggle under high pressing, and this might be a problem in Serie A, especially during build-up play. They try to play out the back and, of course, struggle sometimes under pressure. The midfielders can sometimes be indecisive when pressing, and sometimes there's a little bit of limited final third creativity.
Absolutely. I think when it comes to the lack of creativity in the final third, they definitely had something going for them, even with the amount of goals that they managed to score in the season, which I believe I have listed down somewhere here. Cremonese managed 62 goals. So I wouldn't exactly say that they struggled in the final third, because they simply had a plan that worked. So Barbieri and Atsi, their job is get the ball into the fucking box, man.
Get
the ball into the box, because over there you have De Luca or Vasquez waiting for you.
Yeah.
Jonsson, you guys will remember him as a winger.
Mm-hmm.
Jonsson was used as the Lautaro Martinez in this case. Jonsson was used as the link between midfield and the wingers, and De Luca and Vasquez. So he was that guy loitering around the penalty area, picking up the ball and making shit happen over there. One player that I believe we've mentioned before, Van de Putte, very, very important when it comes to his essentially box-to-box abilities and getting everywhere, literally covering so much ground in the game. However, I also really enjoyed Castagnetti.
Oh, yeah.
Castagnetti was typically the guy with a lot of experience, obviously, but he was typically the guy that was kick-starting their attacks, or kick-starting their transitions. He was the guy dropping incredibly deep. He was that number 6. He was the guy that would start orchestrating their play. So I really enjoyed him as well. But this team is all about the wingers and the strikers, man. That is Absolutely. What this team is centered around.
And one of the most fun to watch is indeed Franco Vasquez, who's left-footed. He's 36 years old, actually, so we're not going to be seeing him for
so
much
annoying.
Longer.
You think you found the next big thing, and he's 36, man.
Yeah. He wore the number 20, and this guy basically just shoots on sight, no matter where he is. Even if he's outside the box, he just shoots. He's not flashy at all. He's not a dribbler. He will take touches to tee himself up. So he'll take a few touches to find that moment of space. But the second he has a sight at goal, he'll just have it. And boy, can he have it. Huh?
He's quite a classic forward, in that sense, a classic Italian forward.
I fear he won't be given half the space that he was given in Serie B and Serie A. But
will he go up to Serie A?
That's a good question.
I don't think so.
Like Massimo Coda, stay in Serie B forever.
I don't think we'll be seeing him in Serie A in time soon, simply because of his age.
Yeah.
A heavy reliance on crossing, on long-range shooting, occasional inverted winger interplay. This is definitely a team that knows how to utilize the 3-5-2 formation.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm interested in seeing now, since they've let go of Stroppa at the end of the season, They are the only Serie B team right now, or newly promoted team rather, who have yet to decide what manager they're going to be taking to Serie A with them. That is going to be very, very interesting.
They need to sort that out ASAP, to start building some squad harmony and to start implementing the new manager's philosophy. I think Davide Nicola would be an excellent fit, especially now that Lecce seem to be going for Di Francesco. That doesn't leave much for Nicola, right?
Lecce are like, you know what? We've been busting our ass staying in Serie A. Now, fuck it. Let's just get this guy and go down to B, and the rest is history.
Yeah, let's get that parachute payment.
Exactly. Let's get that parachute payment.
So we can buy a player. Easiest way to,
if we go down, we get 25 million. Yeah. Guys, let's do it. We've been there 3 years now. Sell Kristovic.
Sell Kristovic to like Leeds, apparently. They want to.
Leeds. They're so funny, these English teams, man, the players that they pick up from Serie A.
That's true.
But that is Cremonese.
Yes, very excited to see.
In a nutshell, yes, very, very excited to see Cremonese back in Serie A. A name that you will be recognizing, of course, is also Pikel.
Oh, yes.
Pikel, Ceccherini, Castagnetti, Azzi, Dennis Johnson. These are guys that we've seen before. Very exciting to have them back at Cremonese. I'm excited to have them. Let's jump to the guys that creamed everyone. Sassuolo, we had absolutely no debate that season where they got relegated was the only off-season that they had.
Yeah.
They were in Serie A, I believe, for 8 years. Correct me if I'm wrong. Eight years they were
off
in Serie A.
Off the top of my head.
No, but for some reason, I have two figures in my head. One's 8 and one's 11. And it's not like I'm off by one. No, I just have that photographic 11. Shit, and I'm not sure which one it is. 11 years in Serie A. I wrote it down, obviously. Eleven years in Serie A, Sassuolo. And this one, they were always improving, almost battling for Europe at certain points, finishing 10th, finishing 9th. And then one season, they fall off and they get relegated. And it was devastating, man. Absolutely devastating. Their first season back in Serie B, and they destroyed everyone. Of course, not with Dionisi. Dionisi out, and he remained out. But they hired Fabio Grosso. Fabio Grosso has gotten now his second successful Serie B title. He had won the league with Frosinone before. He had won the Serie B title with Frosinone. Didn't really work for him anywhere else. He sucked at Lyon, and he sucked at a bunch of other teams.
Yeah,
he went
to Lyon and got attacked by the fans.
Literally, bro. Yeah. And it wasn't the first time he got attacked. No. He got beaten up somewhere else as well. When I'm a bit more chill, I'll pull that up.
Speaking of Sassuolo, by the way, they actually did make it to the Europa League in 2016-2017.
Of course.
And it was,
man,
Di Francesco who took them up.
Of course it was. Yeah.
That was sensational, actually. Yes.
That sounds
like
a fever.
It wasn't that long ago, funnily enough. But yeah.
So let me just go through some of the signings that they made. Obviously, they did have some money to spend. It's not like they focused a lot more on keeping their players. Mm-hmm. Of course, Lauriante, Thortsvet, Berardi, Mulatieri. These are players that you want to keep, man.
Yeah, and Josh Doig.
And it's so hard to go down to Serie B and keep these players. But they've managed it the same way Parma managed, the same way Cremonese managed. But they did a hell of a good job. They spent 3.6 million on Matthias. Will really be able to say this guy's surname, but I'm not. Skielerup.
Yeah.
Or Skielerup.
Or
Skibidi. They signed Odenthal from Como, who was a great signing. He started quite a few games. Nicholas Pierini from Venezia. I'm going to say this, Jake.
Pierini has actually been there since 2017, has been loaned out, constantly coming and going.
They apparently bought him for 1.2 million over here. I'm going to tell everyone, me and Jake played, I believe, who did you choose on FIFA last time?
Who was it? I can't even...
I went Sassuolo. Always with these excuses, man. I went Sassuolo. You went someone with a really slow centre back.
Yes, man.
Huge mistake.
This was a nightmare.
Huge mistake. And I beat him like 10-6, bro. It was the weirdest game of FIFA I've ever played. And Pierini scored 8.
Yes.
So here, if you guys ever play with Sassuolo, put Pierini striker. Like, what are you doing?
It's become so arcade-like FIFA.
Oh, yeah. Like Grandpa. Sorry, Grandpa.
It's true. I know. You're just younger and you took advantage of the meta. It's more in your favor.
Exactly. Jan Noni from Perugia for 1 million. Caligara from Ascoli. They also signed a Romanian goalkeeper from Atletico Madrid.
Really?
Yes. His name is Moldovan and he's Romanian. Make it make sense. Lovato from Salernitana, and then some loan transfers. They brought in Verdi, they brought in Mazzitelli, they brought in Mahuremovic, Bonifazi. Guys, you could have guessed this if you listened to us.
They weren't playing around. Of course, they got the full 25 million parachute payments. They have a squad market value of 80 to 100 million. Just to put it into perspective, Pisa's squad was worth 20 to 30 million. They finished second. Cremonese's squad was 40 to 60 million, right? Salernitana's squad, who are currently in the relegation playoffs, we'll tell you all about that very soon, is also worth 70 to 90 million. So these parachute payments make a massive difference.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So they weren't messing around. They wanted to get back to Serie A immediately. And of course, they're backed by Mapei. Mapei, their sponsor as well, is a global chemical company owned by the Squinzi family.
Yo!
Yes, they have a very wealthy ownership. And what they have in money, they lack in support. Because their home attendance at the Mapei Stadium averaged around 10 to 12,000 in Serie B last season. Which is absolutely terrible compared to the others.
Still higher than I thought, because we went to the Mapei.
And there were like four people.
We went to the Mapei to watch Sassuolo against Inter. So with a Sassuolo fan, we went to support Sassuolo. We were four people in a Sassuolo kit. When I tell you, there were maybe, 60 other Sassuolo fans?
Yeah.
Let's say 100.
There was a class on an outing.
There was a class on an outing, literally, bro, from Bologna or Modena, whatever, because their stadium's in Modena. That's a huge problem. Their stadium is in Modena, and they are from Bologna. So obviously people are just going to choose Bologna as their team because they're closer.
And they're more historically, of course.
Exactly. But that's why it's a good thing that they're bringing schools there to see and whatever. But everyone else was an Inter fan, bro. We were surrounded by the loveliest Interisti, the loveliest Interisti, really joking with us.
That's true.
Making fun of us after we screamed because Berardi scored.
Sassuolo scored first and then lost 2-1.
We're screaming, Mimmo! They're taking the piss out of us.
So, just to continue to compare, Pisa, 15 to 20,000 in attendance compared to Sassuolo's 10 to 12. Salernitana, 20,000 plus every week, despite a shit season. Sassuolo's attendance was often below 50%. So we're talking 8 to 10,000 people reflecting
a
very small fan base, of course.
That's pretty shite, if I'm being
honest.
Yes,
that's the only thing I don't like about Sassuolo. You know, the fact that there's no atmosphere. I like these teams coming up to have that authentic, real atmosphere. The likes of Salernitana have, the likes of Lecce, the likes of Parma. They've got these very loyal, loud fans.
Every
you know?
Game is an away game for them. I swear on my life it is. It's man, true. Even when Milan won they won the league in that stadium. You think there was a single bloody Sassuolo fan over there? It was all Rossonero, the stadium, even when they played the likes of Atalanta, Roma, so on and so forth. They literally have two home games every season. But even without the presence of fans, again, they managed to hold on to their strongest players. Lauriante stayed there. Berardi, Captain Berardi, stayed there. Thortsvet, Obiang, Tolian. And then they made some changes where they had to. They brought in Moro, big forward, who did a great job for them. Moro, essentially, if we want to go straight through how they like to play their football, so... It's a 4-3-3 formation, a classic Grosso 4-3-3 formation. A lot of the times it shifts to a 4-2-3-1 if Thortsvet is fit. If Thortsvet is fit, he goes behind the striker as a playmaker. If Thortsvet isn't fit, because he did spend a lot of time injured last season, that's where they bring in Guion. Guion is more of a box-to-box presence, and they play very different football with Guion on the pitch rather than when they have Thortsvet on the pitch. Their goal, Sassuolo, is remain compact at the back. However, give a lot of creative liberty to the players up top. Your goal is get the fucking ball to those forwards. Knock it up to Moro. Let Moro chest it down or play the ball around to Lauriante, Berardi or Thortsvet. And let them do the rest because those are Serie A players in Serie B. That was the name of their game. And they pressed, They pressed high. Moro really led that press up front.
In fact, they had the best attack in the league and only the third best defense, because their style was so offensive. Yes, bro, just to continue on what you're saying, the center backs were extremely compact. Josh Doig, you'd remember him from Serie A as well, often joins the midfield to act as a playmaker because he's definitely got that ability. Bolaka was the main playmaker in midfield, while Mora would drop deep to initiate play, winning second balls. They have quality depth, so rotating wasn't an issue and injuries weren't an issue, even when Berardi was out. Speaking of Berardi, him and Lorient are quality options out wide, and they like to tighten up out of possession to liberate counter-attacks for Tolian and Doig, who are also very good at this level. They had a four-man block in midfield off the ball to win the ball back, and they immediately have a numerical advantage, causing a lot of chaos on the counter. And Bolaka, of course, would cover for Berardi when Berardi would advance or not track back.
Yes. I just want to go into, because you mentioned Doig. Mm-hmm. One thing that I really noticed about them was the difference in how they operated when it comes to the left back and right back under Grosso. And with Dionisi and De Zerbi, to be fair. De Zerbi and Dionisi in Serie A, they believed a lot in involving the wing backs in offensive scenarios. Both of them, at times, inverted wing backs, joining the midfield, doing this and that, and playing a modern style of football. With Grosso, it's a little bit more structured in the sense that Doig goes up, and when Doig goes up, Tolian stays down. And with Tolian, Tolian kind of, because we've seen also Tolian play as a center back, as a right center back. Yeah. That is how they start to form a three at the back and a four in the midfield when they shift to a 3-4-3. A 3-4-3 or a 3-4-2-1.
Or a 3-2-4 at times.
Bro, I read somewhere, where was it? I'm going to find it. A 3-2-3-2. Tell me where you've ever heard of that. A 3-2-3-2. Yeah. But what they get is a numerical advantage in every stage of play, the way that Grosso sets up the game. Grosso enjoys overloading positions. Mm-hmm. And when he overloads positions, the other teams just simply, they can't keep up with the intensity that is being provided by Sassuolo.
And the level. I mean, you look at Berardi and Lorient, it's just unfair for the other teams. You look at Berardi, he's the best player in the league by far. He played an important role in transition in midfield. You see him in midfield, he gets the ball, he takes a few touches, he creates space for himself and just whacks the ball upfield to Lauriante.
1v1, it's done. Yeah. 1v1, it's done. Any player in Serie B up against Lauriante or Berardi, it's incredibly tough. Even some of their substitutes, even when Volpato's playing there, for example.
And even Lorient, man, this season was a little bit different to what we're used to. While he's still extremely good at carrying the ball and dribbling, he was often on the end of many sequences. So he scored many goals that were just simple tap-ins or finishing off patterns of play.
Because of Moro. Yeah. Because
support utility striker.
Exactly. Because when we saw them play with the likes of goal scorers in Serie A, Pinamonti, Ciccio Caputo, these guys were goal scorers. So Lauriante's job was to provide for them, and we saw him rack up assists, we saw him be a bit inconsistent in front of goal as well, Lauriante, in the past, but having someone like Moro is so important for them, and even when Moro doesn't need to touch the ball, because his physical presence demands a few centre-backs on him, so he typically drags the defenders away, and if he doesn't drag the defenders away, then Berardi is. It's triple, there's nothing that rhymes with triple that I can say, like double trouble, eh?
Triple cripple.
Triple nipple, man. the triple nipple. Sure, let's go with that. But that was their goal. They also improved a little bit when it comes to their defensive record. Of course, we're not going to go crazy and say they've solved their defensive issues because they had a better record in Serie B than they did in A. But when they were in A, they had huge problems defensively. Absolutely. You remember, they had the likes of Kirikez back in the day, and then they tried to upgrade. They dropped Kirikez and they got Ruan Tresoldi. and it was
the most error-prone defender I've ever seen in my life.
Shit show after. Honestly, just incredibly error-prone.
Yeah. Erlich was there.
Erlich. They have a new goalkeeper in Moldovan, as we've said before.
It's probably Moldovan, right?
Probably Moldovan, but it just always wants to make me talk about Consigli and his one his one appearance his for one Italy appearance and for why Italy, like. And why he only has one appearance for Italy.
God knows what went down, huh?
God knows. He must have been weird,
bro. A bit weird in the locker room.
They called him up once. They caught him wanking in the showers. They're like, we're not going to call this guy up again.
That must be it. There's no other explanation.
Simply has to be.
Yeah.
And then in second place,
Pisa.
Pisa.
Pippo Inzaghi's Pisa.
Formerly Pippo Inzaghi's Pisa. He's bringing out the kit. Formerly Pippo Inzaghi's Pisa. Pippo Inzaghi got them promoted, as he has gotten the likes of Benevento promoted in the past.
I have the whole list somewhere, because he's promoted quite a few teams now. Where did I write it? Yes. Yes, here it is. So he's taken Venezia to Serie B and Benevento and Pisa to Serie A. That's it. So he's becoming somewhat of a specialist considering his age.
And now even more so, because he didn't go up to Serie A with them. And he's like, I'm going to go to Palermo. Palermo have a really good sporting project. They're one of the wealthier teams in Serie B. They're owned by City Group.
Yes.
Or Shitty Group for all you United fans out there.
He had a 700k release clause, Ponzaghi.
700k release clause? Yeah. Jesus, yeah. Not even when he was a player. Ponzaghi segna con noi, sorry. but now they've appointed Gilardino as their new manager. They're just going for...
all set. It's not official yet, but every paper is reporting that it's all set to be Gilardino.
If Gilardino isn't in Serie A next season, I'm going to be really upset because I think the world of him. They went from Aquilani, Alberto Aquilani, to Pippo Inzaghi, to Gilardino. Mm. Y'all cooking with these exes, man, with these former players.
True.
But yes, automatic promotion for Pisa. They also made some good signings. One super important signing that they made, I'm sure it's a guy we're going to talk about quite a bit, bro, is Lind, Alexander Lind. They bought him from Silkeborg, 22-year-old forward. They bought him for 4 million. Mehdi Leris, 26-year-old Algerian French gentleman. They bought him from Stoke for 3 million. Semper, most of you will remember Semper, the goalkeeper. They bought him from Como for 2.5 million. Angori, Samuele Angori, the left back from Empoli, 1.4 million. The likes of Bonifanti as well. And then the likes of Abdelgard, Ser Nicola, who was a very good signing. And also Francesco Coppola, not to be confused with Brighton's new centre back.
Yes, unfortunately for Hellas Verona, by the way.
Exactly.
Yeah, what you'll notice is these signings are mostly there to steady the ship, right? Yes. Because Inzaghi's game plan is very system heavy. It's very organized. We'll get into it very soon. Just to give you a breakdown of how Pisa performed throughout the season, they scored 58 goals, second to only Sassuolo. They had a shot conversion rate of 13% compared to Sassuolo's 16%. Tramoni scored 13 goals and got 3 assists. He was their key player.
He was a beast.
He's a Tramoni, beast. He's a beast, man. Bro. He's like a hybrid winger slash striker who wears the number 11. He's right-footed. He's not shy to take it on his left at all. At one point when I was watching his highlights, I'm like, what foot does this guy prepare? Then I saw him curling a crazy one with his right. I'm like, he's definitely right.
In many ways, reminds me of Lorenzo Insigne a little bit. But I feel like he's got a bit more.
He's
to
more
him.
Unpredictable.
Of course, more unpredictable.
Insigne,
it doesn't compare to what Insigne
can do when cutting in on his right.
Yes.
But Tramoni and then is more maybe capable of like dropping his shoulder and taking it to the left and surprising the opponent. He's very unpredictable.
He also
shoots on sight.
He's also very, very calm. Even the way that he places the ball, you barely see him smash the ball. He places it. He's also Fritalian, as we like to call them.
Yeah.
They also had the likes of Lind, who got 8 goals, Moreo, who has 7 goals, Idrissa Toure from wingback, racking up 6 goals and 3 assists. That's absolutely legendary.
Yes. So in 20...
4 assists, sorry.
In 2023-2024, they had one of the worst defenses in Serie B.
Roasted.
Inzaghi came in, tightened their defense and took them up through automatic promotion. They were one of the fastest teams in Serie B. In fact, they are tied with Spezia for the fastest in Serie B.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and they have very clinical finishing from high
faster than Sassuolo.
Faster than Sassuolo, which is crazy.
Very, very interesting.
Average speed of 2.30 meters per second in open play.
I'll tell you why that is. That isn't having faster players, bro. That is having more harder working players because it's an Inzaghi system. If Inzaghi relies on something, it is discipline, tactical discipline. Pippo Inzaghi is not like his brother. He's not looking to create something that has never been seen in football before. He wants the fundamentals, he wants the basic, and he wants people who are willing to die for him, much like his brother in that sense. But they're very defense first. They're very adaptive, very pragmatic. They are the kind of team, and we were trying to find what lineup they preferred. Pretty much different every single game, just preparing for the team in front of them. They enjoy the 3-5-2, but they're not exactly
limited
like
to it.
Sorry?
They're not limited to it.
They've played a 4-3-3 as well. Mm-hmm. They've played a 3-4-3 as well. And also, their 3-5-2 is very different to the 3-5-2 of Cremonese because they don't rely on that wing play. They'd rather use the middle. They'd rather go centrally to the trequartisti, to the more creative players rather than stretching a team wide. It's essentially hard work and intensity with risk-averse attack.
Exactly, and quite direct, to be honest. The patterns are like Marin drops, the central defenders step up.
Exactly.
Passing options open up and they play the ball forward. Now, just a note on the speed note. Sassuolo don't need to run as much because they have more possession in every game. They
very
dominate.
True.
So
very
they're
true.
Always in the opposition's half, right? Pisa need to counter, so they need to put their speed to the test more. Pisa averaged nearly 1,000 spectators per away game. That's the best away record.
Can I be honest with you for a second? Yeah. So many good connection flights in Pisa. Swear on my life. That has to be part of the reason. Probably. To fly out to other places in Italy or to get a train. It's one of the best places. Also, you're great fans. But that's huge.
But away they're not.
Yes. When they go to away games. So they have easy transportation, easier ways to get there because of the amount of flights that leave Pisa. Yeah. I just want to say, because I said they don't use their wing backs, as in they don't overwork their wing backs, but the likes of Angori, Ser Nicola, and Idrissa Toure actually racked up goals, assists. They were involved, but not the same way Inter like to involve their wing backs, or the same way Genoa under Gilardino utilize their wing backs, or Udinese use their wing backs. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we have to look at the key players and what they do, Semper, he's a he can kick the ball long and accurately for a goalkeeper, quite good at that. Then we have Lint, you mentioned him before, striker, good at hold up play, good at pressing, he's an aerial target. Tramoni is the playmaking dribbler.
He's the guy.
Very important in the build up play too. Toure was very good and important for overlapping. He was a consistent outlet. Piccinini was a box-to-box player who pressed a lot, late runs into the box. And then Marin, of course, was a deep playmaker controlling the tempo. Not to be confused with Cagliari's.
With the other deep-lying playmaker named Marin.
Yeah.
Which it's crazy. If your surname is Marin, you're a number six. with fucking great tempo control on a game and technique. Yeah. Pisa, much like Cremonese and not like Sassuolo, they build the ball out from the back as well. Patient, it almost seems like they focus a lot on not losing the ball and not putting themselves in situations to concede. In that sense, they are very, very, very disciplined. That is why, even though Spezia in many times looked like a better team than Pisa with a lot more flair to them, with the Esposito brothers and this. The Esposito brothers remind me of the Menendez brothers.
Even,
I don't know.
The Salamanca brothers, the cousins from Breaking Bad.
Tuco Salamanca and the other guy. Okay, let's get back to it. But it was the consistency of just shutting up shop and ensuring that they never had to put the alarms on. But they enjoyed this progressive slow play while ensuring that nothing goes wrong. Essentially, they enjoyed Marin dropping deep between the two wide center backs to create this 3+1 build-up base. The right wing back in Toure had 8 goals and 4 assists, often stayed wide and he stretched the opposition, while on the left, who was one day it's Angori, the next day it's Beruato, and the next day it's Ser Nicola, they invert into midfield to overload the center. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stability and numerical advantages. And then the midfielder, usually Marin, acts as the playmaker. And whenever he has the ball, whenever anyone has the ball, essentially look for Tramoni. Yep. Tramoni is the same way, you remember how we used to say Papu Gomez follows the referee?
Because
he always...
He's in a
pocket of space constantly. Tramoni.
Yeah.
Tramoni is constantly in a pocket of space.
Absolutely, bro. I don't have much else to add, funnily enough, about Pisa. I'm just very excited to see Gilardino taking this team, taking over this team. I liked what I saw from Gilardino, although it must be said that he didn't do very well on a results or points perspective.
Last season.
Yes, last season.
Because the season before, finished like 11th, mm-hmm, with newly promoted Genoa, which was quite fire. I think his style suits them. I think Gilardino is fantastic. I think he's going to be a top manager in the future, which, to be honest, I didn't really expect.
It's an Italian striker,
you know what I mean? To be honest, I don't have too much to add on Pisa either. When it comes to their weaknesses, just because it's one thing we didn't really focus on, is they're vulnerable to wide overloads if the wing-backs are caught out of position. Mm-hmm. The central defense can be exposed when midfield pressing is bypassed, and they struggle to break down deep blocks because of their lack of one-to-one dribblers. That is unless Tramoni decides to turn it up. But I think that is it for the 3 promoted teams, bro.
Shall we go through the chaos that's happening at the bottom of Serie B?
Yes, bro, because apparently now we're branching down to Serie C.
Yes, so as it stands, of course, in Serie B, if the teams that finish in 16th and 17th are level on points, it goes to a relegation playout. I think even if they're not level on points, actually, it goes to relegation playouts regardless.
Because
4 teams get relegated in Serie B. Exactly, that's the way it is.
That's just the way it is.
So, originally... Salernitana and Brescia were tied with 42 points. Sampdoria had 41 points. Then Cittadella and Cosenza were automatically getting relegated. However, 114-year-old Brescia have gone bankrupt after the owner Cellino failed to honor a 3 million euro debt that he owed.
Become a patron and help us save Brescia, guys.
Exactly, yes. They've been relegated to the closest non-professional league, which is Serie D, being expelled, of course, from all professional divisions, and they risk being dissolved if no one buys them out. So if anyone listening here has 3 million euros to spare, do save Brescia, please, because they are the team. Become a patron and save Brescia. They are the club that has rocked the likes of Roberto Baggio, Pep Guardiola, Luca Toni, Andrea Pirlo, Tonali, Balotelli. These guys were all over there, of course.
It's as sad as when this happened to Chievo Verona, man. Haji, as well, bro, used to represent Brescia.
So, while they were... So, Sampdoria initially were getting relegated, right? But Brescia were docked 4 points, sending them below Sampdoria, exactly. Giving Sampdoria a lifeline, right? So, Sampdoria have to face now Salernitana and the relegation playout. The first leg has been played, and Sampdoria were at home, and they won 2-0, thanks to goals in the 39th minute from Muellenstein and a goal in the 86th minute from Curto. Shout out to Fabio Borini, who got a red card in the 92nd minute, and Stojanovic, who had saved Empoli that one season, who got a red card as well in the 96th minute. And now, after the first game was postponed because of the whole irregularity surrounding Brescia, the second leg has also been postponed because many Salernitana players suffered food poisoning on the way home from the first leg against Sampdoria.
Can you fucking imagine that, man? Like, COVID finished. Yeah. There shouldn't be any more of these excuses. Like, ah, sorry, everyone has sick, like the chicken fever or whatever. Yeah, they all got food poisoning. Firstly, sack the head chef, like, yeah. Sack whoever it is, because if someone contributed to your team, unless it's unless classic Serie B tactics, yeah, like they wanted to win some more time. For those of you that think it's done because Sampdoria won the first game 2-0, you clearly don't know what the atmosphere in Salerno is like.
Absolutely.
That second game is going to be, we're talking flares, we're talking 90 minutes of chanting and people beating the fuck out of each other.
And no matter what happens, there's going to be vandalism.
Exactly, exactly. And you had made this joke once, so no one gets offended. Mm. But if you're going to this game, keep your watch at home. wow. And just keep your hand on your right pocket if your phone is there. Just because it gets quite violent.
Bro makes a risky joke, but throws me under the bus.
You're the big brother. Eh? You need to shoulder the responsibility of all this. So Sampdoria have not been relegated yet. We saw the Genoa fans as a little throwback, and the Genoa fans walking around with their
procession, right?
With a procession for Sampdoria with a casket for Sampdoria, but they live to fight another day. And I am hoping to see Sampdoria back in Serie A soon, because that is a derby. I miss the Lanterna derby, man.
Yeah. Genoa, Sampdoria, of course, for those who don't know, one of the most heated derbies in Serie A.
Give us Salernitana, Sassuolo and Sampdoria all in the Serie A at the same time. Similarly. Yes.
Would be great, huh? So, bro, I think, funnily enough, that's it.
This is our shortest episode in history, yeah?
Absolutely.
Nice, because I'm hungry. It's insane. Thank you very much, guys, for listening. We haven't yet really decided what the hell we're going to do next week, but tune in anyway, and have a look.
See. Maybe an update episode.
Exactly.
Listener questions. Maybe we'll take questions from our patrons.
It's quite good. It's a good idea, bro. To be discussed. Thank you very much for tuning in, guys. Love you all. Ciao, ciao.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. And the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend.